Welcome to Life Lab with David Ponder and Zach Schaefer. We are the podcast of Experience Experiments.
We give you those experiments via change challenges at the end of each episode.
We created this podcast because we wanted to talk about important topics that can help us all live meaningful lives.
You might agree with what we have to say, or you might disagree. But the point there is that you get something new to think about.
There's no edits and no gimmicks. Our entire point is to help you take action and live a better life.
You only get one life to live, so you may as well make the most of it.
Good morning, everybody. Zach Schaefer here. And this is David Ponder. And we are doing a Life Lab to be COVID friendly this morning. Today is our first virtual recording session using the Zoom technology, as I'm sure millions of you are also having to use with this crisis unfolding. So hopefully everything goes well and the quality turns out magnificently. I think the universe gave us a fantastic example of our topic today, because the typical process that we've established for Life Lab is that Dave gets up on early Saturday mornings and then comes to my house at 6:30 a.m. We just live about a mile and a half away. We do some notes and then we dive in. But because we've done it that way for over a year, we've become somewhat efficient with it. And my family's been trained as to how that works. Dave's family has not. And so this morning, Dave's youngest kiddo, Dylan, did not understand the efficiency parameters of how we run Life Lab.
Surprising. My three-year-old didn't care.
That was funny. That was just making me laugh. That such a great example. But that's one of my points I want to make is efficiency. Yeah, is it great? Of course it is for capitalism. It's what makes the system work. It's the oil for the system. It's the growth process. It's not a great growth process for family. And you did a great example of being inefficient with Life Lab, but showing love to your kid just then by really just totally ignoring me and just dealing with him in a great way, in a super positive, like great role model way. And that's one of the points, maybe my most important point, just to get to it, is efficiency. It's worshiped, even though we don't act like we do. It's worshiped in everything we do, every technology that's made, every software update, every new car model. Everything is about doing more with less and faster. But what about love? Can you love more efficiently?
Perhaps. But okay, so first of all, before we get there, let's revisit that question. Let me read the definition of efficiency that I have, because I think we need a groundwork to say, can you do that more efficiently? So what are we saying efficiency is? This is the definition that I liked. It says efficiency is the often measurable ability to avoid wasting materials, energy, efforts, money, and time in doing something or producing a desired result. In a more general sense, it's the ability to do things well, successfully, and without waste. Can you love more efficiently? Maybe if you think the idea of love is learning to love. When you're a child, you know, you have love for your family. But you may not know it, you know what I mean? Or you may not appreciate it. It's just, it's there, it's innate, it's built within you in the family unit and your experience of bonding with your parents.
In a good family, plenty of kids don't have that.
True. But I mean, in a good family, right? I think when it comes time to love someone outside of your immediate family, there's a process of learning how to be good at it, right? Like you have the feelings, you have the emotions almost immediately. But then I guess the only, so I'd say you can't be efficient with the feelings, with the emotions, with the core, really love, right? But then like your behavior to back it up, I guess you can get more efficient at.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that I like your how you differentiated it. That makes sense. Again, I just tend to think my definition is doing more with less faster. That if somebody's trying to be efficient, or you call someone or a process, oh, that's efficient, it cranks out more and does it faster or better than a previous benchmark. So it's often tied to, you know, productivity, the workplace.
It's always tied to productivity. Yeah.
My favorite differentiation between efficient and effective is efficient is doing things right. Effective is doing the right things. So you can be super efficient in your work or even in your relationships if you think you are. But if you're not effective, you're fucked.
That's really great. I love that. Doing things right versus doing the right things. And it takes a minute to think about what you just said, right?
Yeah.
So doing things right, right? So like, we're going to do this process. We're going to do A, B, C, and D. And then you inspect the process. Hey, we don't need to do B. And we could do C differently. Now we're just doing a new A, C, and D, and it's way faster and uses less energy and it's time and more efficient, right? But that whole process might be the wrong thing to be doing altogether if you're trying to achieve a certain goal. So that's really great. I love that.
Or I just see it. That's perfect from your type of work, technology, process optimization. From the people side, it's quite simple in a business. Every company's got some kind of core value that is tied to their people. And yet 99% of the decisions they make has no criteria involved with how it affects their team members. And so they'll go really deep on a scenario like you just described, A to B to C, system and process optimization, X, Y, Z, and not think at all about the people side of the equation and how that's affecting them. They try to fix the people side to adjust to the system rather than vice versa. And that's not effective.
You know what? Maybe we're hitting on a bigger thing, which goes back to your, can you love more efficiently, right? Like maybe there's a difference between efficiency with work, process, you know, life, everything, and people. There's like efficiency doesn't apply well to people.
Well, it's 'cause it comes out of manufacturing. It comes out of, robotics and machines. That's why.
Well, I mean, you can even take it back, I would say. You can even take it back to our origin as hunter-gatherers, right? And our survival used to depend on efficiency because you only had so many arrows, right? And you only had so much time before night came and you couldn't eat or whatever. You couldn't.
Yeah, yeah. I agree with you. I misspoke. The doctrine, dogma, methodological precision, and disciplines that have emerged that everyone gets credentials about have emerged because of manufacturing and capitalism and productivity.
You're totally right. Go ahead.
No, you're right too. I agree with you because I had a point about agriculture, but yours goes even pre that. And so that totally makes sense. I like what you said there. Because people are more efficient hunter-gatherers, then we can bring in the evolutionary biology aspect that, well, their families probably are around longer because they have larger stores of food, et cetera. And then maybe they're able to capture some of their hunting and gathering methods and scrawl it up on the cave or share that oral story with somebody else and teach them a technique. And so we had our first Six Sigma lessons going on back in the cave and we didn't even know it.
Yeah, I actually wanted to basically take that leap and kind of apply sort of a Maslow's hierarchy of needs perspective to it, which is say, you know, at one point in time, our lives depended on efficiency, right? So in that aspect, it was a necessity. And maybe that's where it became so worshipped. You know what I mean? It became such a core value of being a human is understand or like valuing efficiency and things, right? Like you have to survive. But then at some point, just like every other or many of the other topics that we talk about, right? So fear. Fear is a very useful emotion when it comes to survival and anxiety as well. But then whenever we advance as a tribe, a global tribe, right? Or an advanced Western tribe, whichever lens you want to put on it, we get way past that point where survival is no longer the point. We're way past the survival piece. And now those things become less useful because the return, you just get declining returns. You're already surviving. Why are you feeling fear and anxiety now? You know what I mean? Like, because you're not, you didn't hit some big achievement at your corporate milestone. You know, you're afraid you're going to fail at a presentation tomorrow in front of people. And that ruins your health. It actually does the opposite of what it was meant to do, make you survive. It starts right. to kill you slowly.
Especially if it's not managed effectively. I will say, though, as somebody who's very anti-fear, most types of fear, fear is a great tool, man. It's a great motivator. I use it every day to keep me hungry and ambitious and striving and clawing for more. But you got to be real self-aware of where it's at, how you use it, and what you do with it. Because if not,
it can run rampant.
Yeah.
It can run rampant. And so I guess what I'm saying here is I'm making the parallel. I'm saying efficiency is that same type of tool.
Yeah.
It is very useful. If you use it correctly, if you apply it right, it is useful. It will allow you to achieve things, get things done, and save resources. And that's important, you know.
But that's however, go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, you take it one step too far and all of a sudden it's killing you and it's killing your relationships.
Or it's killing lots of other people. You know who is maybe one of the most efficient systems known to modern man?
Who?
The Germans. What they did in their country in World War II. There's a whole series of literature, academic literature books written about power and what Nazism did and how efficient their system was at getting the entire country, for the most part, regular folks, to buy into that. And the whole core of the process was standardization, optimization, differentiation of knowledge, specialization of knowledge, efficiencies at all costs, ultimate precision. So they took the focus away from effectiveness, doing the right things, killing all of these people, and extending our power and reign, and they focused it on efficiency, doing things right. Really interesting stuff there. So when you were talking about efficiency and you threw in the moralism, yeah, but it's, you got to do it better. Well, better by who, for what, you know?
Yeah. And that's a general rule of life. Everything's about perspective. But, right. you know, what is good and what is bad is up to the person or the thing or whatever the vested interest you're asking. But that being said, wow, you just hit on something. So we were talking about efficiency in the micro. We were talking about you as a person doing things efficiently, or you as a family unit doing things efficiently. And you just switched over to something that's kind of blowing my mind a little bit. And I need to, we need to explore it a little more, which is efficiency in the macro. So think about this. You know, we were taught in social studies, right? When we're learning about our government and we're learning about the way that the United States works, we were taught that our system, our very inefficient system, is good because we want things to happen slowly, because we want there to be checks and balances. I can remember being taught exactly this. I wonder if they still teach kids this. And you want to talk about, people are always complaining about how Congress doesn't get stuff done, but I very clearly remember being taught in middle school and high school that we've got three branches and we've got checks and balances and none of them should have too much power. And that's why power is divided between the Senate and the House of Representatives and all this stuff, right? It is a system built to squeeze out efficiency, but maybe it was built out of the lessons learned from other places. You know, Yeah, it's something to think about, right?
So, no, it is. I like that. Yeah,
maybe there's some merit to inefficiency when we're talking about the macro.
Well, and the one thing they weren't taught is that all of that systematic social structures, meaning the rules and mechanisms we've set up to guide our country, the Constitution, the judiciary, legislature, and executive branches, all of that, everything you just said, you know, I agree with. I love the U.S. Constitution and democracy, but I think the greatest lie that's been taught to everyone and that we all just hook, sink, or believe is it's money, man. It's all money in the United States. That's all that matters. That's it. Nothing else. If you have money, you're on top. You have power. All that shit was written by people with money, right? And of course they don't want that talked about. That's what unites the Democrats and Republicans. That's where my big rub is. It's just like, look, all this stuff matters, but if you're rich, you're above the law.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. If you're rich or you're a member of the power structure, the elite, if you're in, George Carlin's got a really great, just Google YouTube, George Carlin, the club. And he's like, you know, he goes through exactly everything that you talked about, plus a whole lot more really intelligently. And he's like, it's a big fucking club and you ain't in it.
Carlin was so good. He's got a good one on germs too. That's very applicable to what's going on right now.
Yeah.
So, what about this though?
Hold on. I still wanted
to go ahead.
Can we come back to that? When we're talking about macro efficiency and we were talking about the way it applies to our government, what I think is, I'll just say this as a side note. Yes, money runs everything. But in my opinion, for the past, whatever, 50, 100 years, corporations have been trying to figure out how to become more efficient at skirting our system. The system itself has been good enough that it has prevented them from being efficient in their takeover of power laws, the government, whatever. And it's taken them 50 plus years, 100 years, whatever, to really do it. And I think they're pretty damn close to doing it. But that being said, I think that's that original system of inefficiency did a pretty damn good job of slowing that down, because you look at other countries that don't have that and boom, all of a sudden power, wealth, elite, money takes control of the system almost immediately. So that's just a side note. And that's inefficiency that was built into that. So I think that there's something interesting in that. Another thing I wanted to talk about with the macro inefficiency perhaps being a good thing is when you talk about stuff like you look at some of these large corporations that say, we want you to spend 10 or 20% of your time on free stuff, on your pet project. And they've all got different names for it. Google had it and whatever.
3M, and Yeah, 3M started that.
That's purposeful inefficiency. They're like, look, this may never turn into anything, probably won't. You know, 95, 99% of those things will never turn into anything.
Yeah, but they're taking a I don't view it as inefficiency. I see how you could, depending on how you define efficiency, but they're taking a calculated risk. They know exactly how much time, who they're putting on that, how much time they're allowing these people. And they're saying, if one of these projects hits, our ROI is tenfold XYZ, and 3M has 50 projects that they can point to where that worked. It's just part of their R&D cost. You know, it's pure research is what they call it. Now, if you just give that to every employee, that's probably pretty inefficient. But if you give that to people who clearly are knowledge workers and creatives, I bet you're going to get a great return there. I think it's going to be pretty damn efficient.
Yeah. And what I was going to say is that R&D itself, even though it's baked into their process, yes, it does have return on investment. Yes. But as far as like the definition of efficiency,
correct.
R&D
correct.
Is the opposite of that. I don't think it's congruent with the idea of efficiency. I mean, ultimately it's not, right? Because it's like, let's take it back to the whole like survival piece. If you're trying to be efficient and it's like, I found a way to catch fish, right? I can get as many fish as I want and I can survive. And I found this way to catch fish with the least amount of bait and, you know, wood, and as far, it's the most efficient process. Only after, like, if I'm trying to be as efficient as possible, and I'm like, okay, so now I have to not just feed myself and my family, because I've gotten there, but now it's my responsibility to feed my tribe. And there's 100 people, and I'm never going to do it, but I could really get good at, I could really, you know, maximize the amount of people in my tribe I can feed with this process, because it's the most efficient thing that I've found, right? Versus somebody being like, okay, not having a tribe and just having a family and being like, I fed my family. Now that's my goal. Now, I don't know. Fish tastes all right, but like, what does that deer taste like? You know, like, I need to go do some research and development. How do I kill that deer? How do I, you know, like, what would be the most efficient way of me doing that? Like, and all of a sudden you're using all this time and resources for something that, you know, may, it definitely doesn't immediately benefit survival, right? So if we're talking about a pure capitalistic structure, you leave R&D to competitors or something. You know what I mean? Like, if you find an efficient process and you just,
well, that's kind of, that's why big companies just want to buy other companies with good tech and smart people. Right. They want to buy their human capital. They want to buy all the labor that that company put into getting patents and processes optimized. But I, while you were talking, I came across something. Again, I think we're starting to get too academic, which I hate doing on this. We're starting to talk about process efficiency versus outcome efficiency. Those are two different things. What you're talking about is experimentation. And experimentation is about forming a hypothesis, testing. Of course, you're going to go through materials and it's going to take a lot of time because you're trying to find truth. That's what it's about. And so when you're looking at science, is efficiency in there? Well, yeah, it is. You could still talk about how you're going to do that process. But then through a larger lens in terms of the outcome, you could be like, well, overall, it's still inefficient because they're testing all kinds of stuff out. So to me, it's too nuanced.
I was going to go nuanced on all kinds of stuff. Like, but keeping it to the macro, and I'll save some of this stuff for later.
Well, right? I have a point tied to your macro that I've been waiting to make.
Okay, do it. Do it.
Your point about the U.S. having checks and balances in three different, sections of power or sections of the government. What's the term I'm looking for? The branches of the government. Yeah, that makes sense. When we had truly sovereign nations before globalization. Now, as our current unfolding, both health and financial pandemics are showing us, what we do in the U.S. is absolutely integrally tied to all other countries in the world, definitely those with developed economies and who are our trading partners specifically in finance. And so it's just way more complex now because the system is both more efficient and inefficient at the same time because it depends on what aspect of the what subsystem you're looking at.
I agree 100%. I agree 100%. But I think one place I wanted to go with it, which I like what you said there. One place I wanted to go with it was like, let's look at any one macro, I don't know if you want to say country. I guess what I'm trying to say is like a macro organism, a macro, like a living structure. So you could divide it up by countries. You could divide it up by groups of people who are interested in certain things. You could divide it up by animals, right? Beehives, efficient at making honey, right? Because what do? They make honey and other bees, and that's it. People are inefficient as a whole because, like, what do? Well, we have to have social structure and we have to spend time, you know, with others in addition to whatever work we do. We like leisure time. We like to play, you know, video games and sports and all this other stuff, right? So in that, we are nothing like bees. Like, we are totally inefficient in that way. But I'm just really glad we are.
Well, because bees have an innate purpose. the whole human experience seems to be trying to figure out our why. We don't know what our purpose is, and maybe that's the excitement of the journey, and also why so many people are so miserable and fearful, because they don't know what their purpose is. And even if while they're seeking it, they can't enjoy the process and the ride and the journey. So maybe they're really inefficiently seeking their purpose in life, and it's a super drain on them. Whereas bees don't have to, they don't have consciousness. So they're not thinking about their I versus their me and how efficient am I at getting honey. I turn on and I go get honey. We don't do that.
That, well, first of all, that's a perfect point. I'll say this, we don't know about bees' consciousness. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. But what I'll say is, your perfect point is people seem to be searching for a purpose, right? Where bees seem to have an innate purpose. I'm trying to tie this back full circle, right? So how do you apply this to what we started this conversation, this part of the conversation about macro efficiency, was Nazi Germany. Well, all of a sudden, all those people had a shared purpose, a collective purpose that brought them together, regardless of whether it was good or bad, right? Like,
and obviously it was horrible.
Obviously it was terrible, but that was their shared purpose, right? So it's like people, we've talked about this many, many times. It's like people have a hole that needs to be filled. I say it in that way. I don't think you verbalize it that way, but I feel like everybody's got a hole that needs to be filled, and they fill it in different ways. And we can all bond together and become super efficient if we have something that we share, some shared priority that we decide, this is what we're gonna do together to fill that hole. And it makes us feel better. You know what I mean? Like, so I would say most of the time, for me at least, whenever I'm trying to be super efficient with something, especially when it's related to work, I'm trying to measure my outputs and pay attention to my inputs. And I'm trying to, you know, cut out the fat and do it a little faster and a little better. And it's a stressful process. There's nothing enjoyable about it. But there's something weird in the macro. Whenever you get groups of people to come at something with a shared purpose, a shared sense of meaning, all of a sudden you get efficiency in ways that you never did before. People choose to cut other shit out of their life and focus on that, and they feel good about it, and it's a good emotion, right? So like after 9/11, right? Everyone bonded together and did different, you know, different things. Same thing is going on now with this coronavirus. Like I saw a video of how people are trying to support healthcare workers in all these different ways. And they showed some neighborhood that's around a hospital, and it was like shift change time. And everybody went out on their balcony and cheered the shift change for the hospital workers. People are volunteering and stuff like that, right? So we're all of a sudden we're getting increased participation. And I would imagine if you start inspecting stuff, just due to the amount that of people that are changing their attention toward it, we're gonna gain some efficiencies with the stuff that we're doing. So it's interesting to me how in the macro, you can all get, you can like find some shared vision, work toward it as a macro organism, and try to build efficiency in, and you get like emotional reward out of it. I don't know, at least that's.
Yeah, no, that's really good. I think having a common symbol to rally behind is important, especially in a country that's so focused on individualism. We don't we do have a heavy-handed government, but they try to act like they're not. But we are very bifurcated. We have 50 different states, 50 subcultures at least. And, you know, so it's nice to be able to try to rally together. And clearly we're still not, but we're getting there around this virus. But it doesn't have to be something positive. It can be something negative. So the war is on the virus. The positive side is on what can we do to beat it, you know. But having that, you mentioned 9/11. Obviously, there was a clear negative target there. Having an enemy to hate together, that's something that's built into our DNA. We love that. We can get really efficient with our hatred and our system. And that's what Germany did. They got super efficient with their hatred, and they turned it into what occurred. But the great thing is we have the internet today. And so hopefully atrocities like that will not occur again, because, you know, the world's eyes are watching and listening at all times. I want to go back
and because of variety.
that's more. Well,
can I wrap up?
Yeah.
I just want to wrap up my thoughts around that. So to wrap up my thoughts around it is that we as a macro organism have inefficiency built into us. We are interested in all kinds of different things. And that's good. I think it's ultimately good. Because it's sort of a theme of LifeLab. I can't tell you how many times we've talked about variety, curiosity, exploration, experimentation. That's all the theme of LifeLab, right? Living a varied life, living an explorative life, versus living an efficient life. Set your goals and do them and cut everything else out, right? Which is almost what, if it's a definite element of career success, efficiency is. So you have to decide what balance you want is the ultimate thing that I'm saying. As an individual, you have to decide what balance you want. And I think it's interesting to observe the balance that we have as a macro organism. And I'm talking about our country, the world, and different large socioeconomic groups. Okay.
Yeah.
That's wrapping up my thought there. Okay.
Well, real quick, in terms of career, the specialization of knowledge is rewarded, not the LifeLab approach, first of all. And your career is a perfect example of that, man. You're so niche and nuanced. I mean, it's ridiculously specific. My career, you could look at it and say it's uber inefficient because I have three separate careers going on at once, two dual careers for the last 12 years. That's not efficient. It's not a way to become a master of the universe and capitalism and a top person in a field, but I don't give a fuck because I know what my values are and I know what I want out of life. And it has nothing to do with efficiency. It has to do with meaning and experience. And this is how I draw from that. So for me, one of the biggest things that get lost in efficiency, a question I had is what is sacrificed? We sacrifice our happiness. We sacrifice our emotions. We sacrifice our ability to be in the present. We sacrifice spirituality, which is being able to be truly aware, cognizant, enjoying the present moment. Efficiency cuts that out and says, no. The moment needs to be put under a microscope and dissected to improve for the future. Efficiency is a tool for prepping. Yes. And so again, it can be really useful. But boy, if you take that to every aspect of your life, you're somebody that I will efficiently cut you the fuck out of my life because you're just exhausting to be around.
Yeah, we've talked about this and I've talked about it as far as like fulfillment goes, right? Like how fulfilling is what you do? And I think we've both landed many times on your varied and quote unquote inefficient, as you said, career. It definitely seems to be more fulfilling. You know what I mean?
Well, it's like, super fulfilling for me, but I can see why other people, I see all the time how people, they don't know how to put me in a box, which I love, but it's tough for them to figure out, well, what do you do? But the flip side of that is there's struggles for me too, because then I don't have this perfect little definition, an efficient definition of my occupational identity, but that's my struggle. That's okay. Those are my choices I've made. I want to go back though to a kind of a macro view of efficiency itself. If you think about efficiency as a continuum, efficiency isn't the natural state. Efficiency is something that has to be brought into existence. So is inefficiency the natural state? I don't think that's necessarily the case either. So then the question is, if it's a continuum with efficiency on one side, and then I thought, is inefficiency on the other? And then I'm like, well, no. What about deficiency? Just completely lacking something. So then it's not a straight line. So then you've got like a line and maybe a perpendicular angular offshoot coming. And then I'm thinking, well, what is the natural state of things? It's entropy. It's the natural movement.
It's chaos.
Towards chaos or the gradual decline to disorder. So what is my point? Once again, efficiency is all about control and about putting us at the center of the universe and making us feel important, which ties back to my point about purpose. Efficiency helps give us that sense that the bee has, that innate instinct. That's what I think.
I love that. I mean, I agree 100%. I was thinking the other day, as I was mopping my floors, right? And I was getting this, when I was done, got this good feeling. Oh, floors are clean. You know, they smell good. Everything is in order again.
Oh, Dave lives the leaf blowing lifestyle, people. Dave's LBL. Oh, dude. Dude, he gets out there and blows the leaf. If there's one leaf, he fires up his leaf blower and he's out there.
You can't have leaves on the driveway. You got leaves, Dave, on your driveway?
Dave is the most efficient leaf blower probably in the Midwest.
Actually, no, I'm inefficient. But you
do it on purpose to be inefficient so you can stay out there and blow more leaves.
Yeah, because it's my rush. Blowing leaves. What are you doing today? I think I'm going to go blow some leaves, maybe mop some floors. I don't know. We'll see. Could get crazy. It actually brings me back to one of the things I had on my notes that I wanted to talk to that we haven't gotten to, but this is the perfect segue, I believe. Perfectionism. So when you're talking about efficiency, you end up talking about, well, what is it you're trying to achieve? And efficiency will say you have to set the right goal, right? So like, you can be obsessive about something. Like if I'm trying to achieve a good, clean, landscaped backyard, right? You can just keep going forever. You will never stop. You know what I mean? So you just have to decide, what is my target that is an efficient target? What is something that is good enough? And I'll say this, I think I got that from my dad, from Art Ponder. Dad, if you're listening, you know, I think in your older age, we've had this conversation and you've been able to reflect, and you probably agree. But like, my dad was all about, like, you know, we maintained our vehicles.
I know. He taught me how to clean the boat and the proper dry on, dry off motions. And he was right. Like, it got it more dry, more fast.
The boat, we had to be perfect, you know, like our cars always had to be vacuumed and immaculate. And, you know, we did stuff a little, those things we did a little overboard. And it's funny how, like, we've had that conversation as me an adult and my brother as an adult. And obviously my dad's like, some of that stuff is some of my biggest regrets that he put such an emphasis on that and spent so much time on it. But it definitely put something into me, you know what I mean? Where, like, sweeping the floors, I can't just sweep them and be like, see a crumb in the corner and be like, yeah, whatever, I did a good enough job. No, I got to get the broom back out because that crumb can't stay in the corner, you know? And so talking about efficiency, you have to, if you're truly going to be efficient, you have to think about how the perfect is the enemy of the good. Isn't that the saying?
Yeah. I'm going to make a comment about you since you're being self-aware about this. We did a death over dinner recently that Dave's wife, Lauren, and my good friend, she's in started a business putting together a planning for non-traditional end of life celebrations and events. And I was actually her first paying client. It was a fantastic experience. Everyone should do it. Helps put your life in perspective and really captures your values and how you want to go out of this world. Aside from that, they threw a nice, wonderful dinner party where we just talked about important things like death. Lovely party. And Dave and Lauren were just fantastic hosts. Like, it was just a great evening. On the way there, I was talking to my wife and I said, do you think Dave's going to be just constantly cleaning while we're there? Because when we're usually at Dave's house, the whole time he has people over, he is sweeping and picking up and moving things. He's not hosting. And I don't know if you're aware of this, dude, but I mean, like, hardcore doing that the whole time. And we'll be in there talking to Lauren. Like, one time it was like 47 minutes. I watched my clock. I'm like, where's fucking Dave? I'm like, Kizzy, look what time it is. And then 47 minutes later, she's like, wow, he's really into it. So you, whatever it is, it's important for you. It's order, dude. It allows you to create a sense of order.
Yeah, you're right. So I did that during the death over dinner. I cleaned the whole time?
No, you were an amazing host. You didn't do anything. You focused completely on your guests and were in the moment in the conversation the whole time. Now, a lot of the times it's just me and Kizzy popping over and we're family, so it's do your shit. I get it. Again, it's not a critique, but sometimes I'm like, dude, put down the fucking broom. Like, let's chill. Let's talk, you know?
Yeah. No, it's good. Actually, that makes me happy because I am self-aware that I do that. And I tried to take that dinner seriously, right?
Oh, dude, it was awesome.
And I'm trying to find a balance of when it makes sense for me to just go ahead and clean up a mess because it's just friends hanging out and we're barbecuing and I don't want to have to spend the next morning all morning cleaning versus no, this is like an actual thing that it's an event and I need to be giving attention to my company. Right, the company of the people who are over, and so
yeah, and a lot of those, it's just us as family. Bolt, you know, do your thing. Like we have come over and be like, hey, when recently we were like, hey, we're just coming over. You're like, cool. Well, I wouldn't expect you to just switch whatever you're doing. We just wanted to hang out in your backyard.
This is a great conversation about efficiency, though, right?
Of course,
because we're talking about time. It's like, well, I don't want to have to be cleaning my kitchen the next morning, right? Because that's time, but. What am I doing? Like, you got to prioritize. You got to look at efficiency and you got to consider the inputs. So we're talking about time, moments. Like you said, an efficient process would consider those moments an input to efficiency, right? Like all they are is an input to an efficient process. They are part of getting something done, right? But sometimes as humans, the getting something done needs to be connecting with other people. The getting something done needs to be, you know, socializing, exploring, experimenting.
Well, yeah, no, you're right.
Intentionally doing nothing. Like, you know, intentionally, I'm going to take a nap. I'm going to go lay on the beach. I'm going to take a hike. I'm going to meditate, right? Like, nothing efficient about that shit. Or is there? Like, you know what I'm saying? Or is it like, I don't know. Anyway, you get
it's chasing emotions. Like, so what you're telling yourself, if we're being just honest, is the emotion of me feeling in control from finishing this chore while my friends are over outweighs the emotional connection I'll feel by sitting and chatting with my friends. That's what it is. Right? Of course it is.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It totally is.
But, and I'm not saying that as a critique. That's me knowing, hey, we're coming over, whatever. We'll kind of bullshit when we can. The kids will get together. Like, I'm not sitting there worrying about that.
Right.
Well, the flip side is that I used to, when people would come over, I'd still have my computer out sometimes. And I switched that. So I just throw it away. And it's just like, okay, if I'm telling somebody to come over, I'm there. I'm present for them. And it always ends up being good. It might begrudgingly be like, damn it. But then I figure it out. But I know when I die, I'm not going to go, fuck. I didn't spend 15 more minutes on that spreadsheet when Justin came over that one time with Jay. No, I'm going to say me and Justin got to talk about XYZ. I don't know. That's just how I think about it.
No, but that's the right way to think about it.
You make a point about failures and errors that I think is important. A quote that I really like, the price of inaction is costlier or more expensive than the cost of making mistakes. The price of inaction is costlier or more expensive than the cost of making mistakes. It's just efficiency doesn't like failure unless you can fail fast and often and tweak it, right? Agile, lean, et cetera. But it's like, well, where is failures? Where is errors? Where is failing forward, learning and all of that? To me, you mentioned perfectionism. I'm a person, we make decisions very differently at the pace of which we do and how much data we need before we're comfortable because we're wired differently. But one thing I know that Jeff Bezos has built into Amazon is if we have 70% information, make the decision. There's no such thing as perfect information. Circumstances, events, constraints change, and then we adapt. So he's all about make the decision with good enough information. And then the systems, if they're strong enough that we built, will adapt. I think that's actually an efficient way of making decisions, even though other people could then say, well, it's inefficient because of what happens down the road.
It just depends where, as you said, where your perspective is on things.
Yeah, and that's right. When it comes to efficiency and failure, like you said, it's all about having the SMART goals, specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and time-bound, and doing the measurement and the reporting and changing on the fly. Fail fast, right? So I'm going to measure, I'm going to report. Oh, there's a failure there. I'm switching. I'm doing something different. Right? That's quote unquote efficient. Efficient failure. Which to me, again, when you're talking about work and whatever, that's the way to do it. When you're talking about life, it sucks the joy out of life. Right?
Comparison is the thief of joy. You could easily say efficiency is the thief of joy.
I agree, because you have to be doing that. When we're talking about efficiency and we're applying it to work, we're talking about comparison. We're talking about measurement, reporting, and comparing to a goal. And you're comparing and you're despairing, right?
Right. No, that's a great point. But now, again, we're talking about generalized. We're doing Bob Ross here, broad strokes. The average person that applies to. But there's a whole large swath of people who don't think that way. And the efficiency and the pursuit of it brings them massive joy. Well, those are the people that go to Six Sigma, Lean, Agile, PMP conferences. They love the credentialization complex and they want more letters and they get into the nuances of that. And that's great because companies want that. I think they're all doing the same thing, trying to do more with less faster. But there's plenty of people who do get joy in that. And they love that idea of being a perfectionist.
You know what we haven't talked about? We haven't talked about something really important, and that is systematizing. I think that's very important to efficiency.
Yeah. It's a major step in any growth process for an organization.
And it ties right back to what you said about the way the universe works. Systems. I'll say this, the universe does have natural systems. And nature obviously has natural systems. And I would recommend everyone. I think we give some good content recommendations when it comes to books and podcasts and things to check out. Principles by Ray Dalio is a free YouTube series of videos. They're all like 3 minutes long. I think there's 10 of them, so it's like 30 minutes in total. Part of his, he talks about systems, and systems are a part of nature, and they are a part of the way that we live our lives and we do our business. And if you can see how everything is a resource in a system, those systems form, operate, break down, and then evolve into a new system, which does the same thing. And it does that over and over again. And he's like, basically, if you can recognize patterns and systems, you can make yourself more, you know, successful than the average person. So yeah, what you just talked about are different systems and Lean, Six Sigma, whatever. And if you even, so obviously within business, I'll just make a side note on those. It is, you're right. It's all about doing more with less. And it's amazing how we as humans and our tribal nature, we pick even one of those, we pick a team and it's like, yep. Oh no, man. I'm a lean person. Like if you're at a party listening to these people talk,
oh, it's so
they'll
funny,
argue
man.
About so whether funny. Lean or yeah, which one's better? Agile? No, agile, man. Agile.
You scrum.
Don't even get me.
You a scrum master?
Well, we do Kanban. We do Kanban. I don't know about you, but and it's just like, oh my gosh, give me a. Anyway, so that's a side note. But what I was saying is, we even try to systematize our leisure time and our vacation time. And you know, you go on a vacation, you have an itinerary, you have an agenda, you have a checklists, you have, oh, we didn't get a picture. Oh, that was on the, we had to get a picture. That was part of the success criteria for that last activity. You know what I mean? It's just funny how we as humans somehow value systems like that.
Yeah. I don't think everybody does it to the degree that you guys do because Lauren's so organized, but
yeah, but
you
still,
guys are on the one end of the. Yeah,
It's true, but I mean, there's magazines about it. There's blogs about it. There's podcasts about it. Like,
absolutely. Yeah. You guys actually do it, though. A lot of that's just crap to sell ads.
Yeah. Well, and let's also talk about, like, me as innate. What is innate in me? That ain't innate in me. That's not the way that I used to be. I didn't grow up with systems. As a matter of fact, my mom is the most anti-system person that I think I know. She literally hates making commitments. So we'll figure it out. I just like to day by day it. I love my mom. She's literally, it's innate within her. She prefers spur of the moment and not planning. She hates planning.
Let me ask you this.
It's really interesting.
Point blank. I don't want you to overanalyze. I want a point blank answer in 1 second. Do you think on an average day throughout her life as a whole versus your life as a whole to this point, she has more joy?
Yeah, probably her. Yeah. I don't know. But that's my gut. That's my gut.
Good. That's what I wanted was your gut. Yeah.
Yeah, that's my gut.
Interesting.
Yeah, I would say on the average, here's what I'll say, and this is what my gut says. My gut says on the average day, she probably has more positive emotion because she's more freewheeling. However, when reflecting, I think she often, you know, is like, I wish I would've. Yeah. Yeah. She tends to hold on to things and look back on things as, you know, well, I never did that. And I wish I would have done that. But then again, she's really good at accepting that even, you know what I mean? Like she'll make those comments, but then she's very good at accepting that. So, I mean, I guess that's something to think about as people. If we're talking about Life Lab and podcasts and okay, fine, you're talking about your family. What kind of lessons are we trying to get out of this? It would be that if you try to systematize everything in your life, you can easily squeeze the joy out of the day, right? All the emotions and the things that you feel in the day, you can use time that you should be, you know, enjoying the moment as a resource to get things done in your system. You might achieve more throughout your time. And so when reflecting upon it, you might feel better looking back on it and going, oh, but I did achieve that and I did get that done and I did experience that. And so maybe there's a trade-off there, you know, assuming what I'm saying is true, which is a big assumption. There might be a trade-off there, and you might need to figure out where you want to fall on that spectrum.
Yeah, but there's anyone that's achievement-oriented, one speaking right now, there ain't no achievement you do where you get lasting joy and satisfaction from, brother. So then look at it from a continuum perspective. The whole process of the work is a grind. And then there's the achievement. It hits. It's momentary. Great. What's next? The grind. There's no way that's equal. There's no way.
You're right. And I love how we come up with conflicting, you know, nuggets of wisdom, things to live by, priorities. Dude, you got to enjoy the ride, right? When you say the grind, like, yeah, but you got to enjoy the grind. You got to love it, right? But then you're in the grind and it's like, oh, you're not doing that right. You got to make it more efficient. You got to make it more efficient. You got to make it more efficient, which is, it sucks all any joy that you would get. It sucks it out of it.
But I think that's where Ray Dalio did a nice job, which, again, I like his book's great. He made a companion app that's even better. It's more efficient than reading. But why I think it's funny is our fucking society is so ridiculous. There's no thoughts. There's no thoughts that are new. Every thought's been thought regarding what he's talking about, principles. He's literally taking stuff that have been said for 2,000 years and just putting it in a book together. Wow, Ray Dalio's a genius. No, he's probably read philosophy. My point is, anyone that has cultivated a set of principles and struggles to truly live by them, not live by them because you can't, you're not the Buddha or Jesus or, you know, people like that, but struggles to live by them,
That is where the attainment is, because you've got your blinders on. One of his quotes that I share with my daughter now every day that I love, Dalio, he taught his kids this from the early age, and it's badass. You can have anything you want in this world. You can't have everything. And that's a billionaire talking. And he's right. You've got to have some blinders on. But within those blinders, if you know what your principles are and you struggle to live by them, that's going to be an efficient life. Sure, you're super inefficient in all kinds of other things, but fuck it. If those aren't your principles and your values and your goals or the direction you're heading, you need to know what race you're racing. And that's what I took away from principles. That's a little different than maybe what some of the philosophers talked about.
I think that's probably the best place for us to end. Got any change challenges?
Yeah, I've got a kind of an easy one, a fun one. It's two sides of a coin. You need to go out and be more efficient in some aspect of your life. It's small or big, it doesn't matter. Probably picking a low risk scenario is a good idea, especially if you're not somebody that values efficiency or systems and processes, et cetera. But just try to do more with less faster. Mowing the lawn, try a new pattern. Leaf blowing, call Dave, check out his YouTube videos. Like, find a way to do more with less. The flip side, this is the fun part. I want you to be strategically inefficient somewhere in your life. I want you to take an aspect where you usually think you're efficient and say, fuck it, and be more like Mary Ponder and more freewheeling and more go with the flow and just see what that's like. And even if it's horrible, great. Chart that, understand that experience, feel that. And just be honest with yourself, why? Why do I really need this efficiency? What's it about for me? What's it doing for me? And then either return to it or don't.
That's perfect. Mine was going to be the opposite, and you gave both sides of the coin. So what I'll say, I'll just add one thing, which is on the trying to be more efficient about stuff. Give yourself, make it time bound and give yourself a lot less time than you normally would. And that will force efficiency. And then see what that's like. Yeah.
Well, it'll give you a constraint that's supposed to force efficiency, but it's up to you to then act and remove distractions and stay focused.
True. Yeah. If you're still going to get whatever it was done in that time, then it will force efficiency. You may not get it done. You may not be efficient.
You may not hit your goal.
Cool. But that'll be interesting. All right. Awesome. Well, I love everything, a lot of the stuff that we said today, man. And about efficiency, I didn't think efficiency was going to go where.
Yeah, neither did I. I thought we'd be 15 minutes in and out.
Yep. But hey, I think it was better this way. And it'll be up to everyone else to decide if it was or wasn't. You know, there are those efficient people. They didn't even get to this part of the episode.
They quit listening back an hour ago.
I love it. Awesome. Well, so with that said, I'll just say have a great day and experiment with life.